RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
If you were listening to our Bytes News on Friday, you might have heard the story about the survey into banking. It was a Federated Farmers Banking survey conducted from May 3rd to 15th this year. 642 responses from farmers across New Zealand. The survey, well, we'll find out what the survey indicates. And Federated Farmers are calling for an independent inquiry into rural banking to address the widespread issues and will present their case, they say, to Parliament's Primary Production Select Committee. Now, to talk about these matters, I want to welcome to RCR Federated Farmers Commerce and Competition spokesperson Richard McIntyre. Richard, thanks for coming on.
Hey, not a problem, Paul.
Okay, so I think it wasn't too long ago that satisfaction with rural banks or banking, the interface between rural New Zealand and banking, was kind of okay. People were generally satisfied with the service they were getting. Is that correct?
Yeah, look, you know, well, going back 9 years to 2015, so when the dairy industry were, you know, at record low milk prices or very low milk prices, struggling for profitability, one in five farmers were saying that they were coming under undue pressure from their banks. The most recent survey we've just done, it's one in four. So that's a huge shift in farmers feeling like they're under a huge amount of pressure. We also, this latest survey, we asked a new question, which was, do farmers feel that their banks are supporting them through this high interest rate climate? And only one in five said yes. So, you know, we've got some serious issues there that need to be addressed.
What is it about now that has changed then? Is it purely interest rates, or is it a general squeeze? Is it cost of living? Is it returns? And why would the banks have that attitude? Are they edgy?
Look, yeah, it's certainly more than just interest rates. I think, you know, interest rates are the most overt part that people look at. You know, they compare what residential homeowners are paying in interest and what's being offered there to what they're paying. They notice that, you know, a residential property owner gets offered an interest rate that stays the same. The bank don't look too much into their risk profile, or if they do, you know, the interest rate still stays the same. If they fall on hard times, the bank might give them a payment holiday for a few months. Whereas as a rural debt holder, the risk of your business is assessed all the time, which is fine, but your interest rate goes up and down according to that. And, you know, basically the way that the banks seem to be viewing the risk of rural businesses is changing, and also their sentiment towards rural businesses seems to be changing as well. There seem to be a few different things in play that are causing them to want to effectively want to put money into the residential market rather than the rural market. And so we've got four of the five major banks seem to be slowly getting out of rural or less inclined to be backing farmers or funding new debt, and only one looking to get in. So we have a lot of farmers that potentially are viewed as being higher risk by their bank, and there's no other bank wanting to come and take that debt off the bank. So the bank puts more pressure on them, saying, look, we really don't want you here. We've decided you're too high risk for whatever reason, or our relationship's broken down, and there's no other bank really coming in to take that off. So it's what is called stranded debt, and that creates huge amounts of stress for those particular farmers, and unfortunately there's quite a high proportion of them.
But the banks need to be aware of that, don't they? I mean, there's a relationship after all, isn't it?
Look, the banks are aware of that. They've always been clear with me in the meetings that we've had that, you know, they can't support every single farmer, and there will be circumstances where, you know, where they can't continue to carry the debt of a certain farming business that they don't seem to be viable. And look, that's a commercial decision for them to make, and we don't really want to be forcing them to do different things. We want them to be free to make commercial decisions. But we've got issues where we see all the banks operate, or, you know, basically all the banks operating in a certain way that is unhelpful for the ag sector. And broadening this out a little bit, you know, obviously we're talking about bank behavior here, but what's causing a lot of it are Reserve Bank regulation. Yeah. You know, yeah. The Reserve Bank, you know, I don't think they're very popular with anyone in New Zealand at the moment, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, good luck with that.
And they're trying their very best to get more unpopular. But, you know, they, in 2011, they increased capital requirements for rural debt, and they've just gone through the process of doing the same again beginning in 2019, and it's being phased in until 2028. And so what that really means is that for rural debt, the banks have to hold more funds in reserve for that debt than for residential. And it's with a view to trying to protect the viability of our financial system, which is certainly commendable. But equally, what this really does is it increases the amount of interest that farmers are having to pay. And it also is like a black hole, because banks are borrowing that money from overseas. Farmers are having to earn that money somehow, give it to the banks, it goes overseas, and it really doesn't make the boat go faster at all. So it's a complete and utter waste. And then talking about doing it again, the Reserve Bank's just stress tested the banks on climate change, and they use this quite remarkable scenario of $150 per tonne of greenhouse gas emissions that farmers would potentially have to pay outright with no discounts or anything like that implemented straight away. And lo and behold, 80% of sheep and beef farms were not viable and 20% of dairy farms. And so they've said, look, it looks like into the future, we're going to have to increase reserve requirements for rural debt even further, which is just utterly ridiculous. Nothing would ever, in a political environment, the government would never actually implement something like that as such a blunt measure. If it ever came in, there would be put in place and timeframes around it. So they're just out of touch in terms of how the world actually works. And that's really concerning. So sorry, Paul, I'm rambling a little bit.
No, it's all right. Let's hear it.
What this really means is, from the bank's point of view, it is more profitable for them or easier for them to actually put money into residential than rural, and they really only want the really high-performing, lower-risk rural businesses. And so those that fit outside of that are really in no man's land or are being put under quite a bit of pressure. So it's a challenging environment.
Yeah, two things, a lot comes to mind because there's a lot there, but two things come to mind. First of all, that blunt instrument that the Reserve Bank uses, the official cash rate, across the board. Now, when you hear Adrian Orr talking, we have money experts on our program. The primary reason is to put the economy into a near or minor recession, to curb spending, to bring inflation down. I'm a dumb guy on the street, but that's as I understand it. But it seems that for the rural sector and the money that earns for the country, that's not an appropriate mechanism. Would that be correct?
Yeah, look, it's a very blunt mechanism, and unfortunately, it's about creating a huge amount of pain. Often not spread evenly as well, with a view to an ultimate goal.
But it's not farmers on the farm going out spending in nightclubs, restaurants, and travel and profligate spending. They're actually, I'm assuming, most farmers are there. It's a business. Lifestyle is one thing, but the business is there, and most of it benefits New Zealand. So it's not as if their spending has to be brought under control from the sort of crazy, spraying it around. Yet they kind of argue that that's why we have inflation. Am I making the point?
I think so. In terms of the official cash rate, so that's applied across all of New Zealand, right? And in all reality, there are certain people spending money that they'd like to have stopped doing that, if that makes sense. But it's a blunt instrument that spreads pain across everyone to try and stop certain amounts of spending. In terms of the rural side of things, the biggest issue we've got around this is we've got even higher interest rates due to other Reserve Bank regulation, which is trying to create financial stability.
And that.
So you add the two. Like we've got farmers paying over 11% in term debt, if that helps you. Yeah. Like, it's just ridiculous.
Imagine that on your mortgage.
For your listeners, who are residential homeowners, the average interest rate that farmers are paying at the moment is just under 9%, right? And you feel a little bit lucky to be in the 8s. If you're in the 7s, you're absolutely exceptional. And there are heaps in the 9s and 10s. So, it's ridiculous. But if we talk about financial system stability for a sec, when was the last time a bank actually made a loss, right?
They were ginormous this time around, weren't they? Or did I miss something?
They just make huge profits every time, right?
Yeah.
And so they've actually got a long way to go before they would even come close to making a loss and affecting financial stability at all. In fact, that scenario I told you about with climate change and $150 a ton, that doomsday modeling that the Reserve Bank did the bank still made a profit, albeit not as big. So there are no issues around resilience. And we've got situations where we've got farmers with 50% equity. So sometimes $4, $5, $6 million in equity, they've worked incredibly hard to build that up. And they've been told by their banks that they're too high risk because their cash flow is too low. And they don't want to extend any further lending if required due to low commodity prices or whatever, or a drought. And they're going to have to sell up in a year or two's time. Where's the risk to the bank?
Yeah. Well, this is what I meant about the relationship. I thought it was a relationship. I know there were specific instances, but the other thing was there does seem to be, I don't want to use the word demonization because it's too strong, but a negative view now that's creeping in, maybe even to institutions now, about, well, farming. You know, it's kind of not the thing anymore. It's sort of on a decline. Do you think that attitude is finding its way into the perception of this sector of New Zealand?
Well, there are a couple of directions to go with this. So certainly it's been really troubling to see that change of sentiment that's gone unchallenged to an extent. You know, I think the government, the previous government in particular, was very, very bad at pushing that. You know, the fact that, you know, we are the biggest emitters, all that sort of stuff. And you know, even Te Papa's got displays that talk about reducing meat and milk consumption to help climate change. You would have thought not driving to Te Papa would have been part of the solution, right?
Good point.
But, yeah, you know, so there's all of that sort of stuff. But what we've also got, and this to me is a little bit fascinating. So the net zero banking allotments, in Glasgow, I think 2021, basically a whole lot of financial institutions got together to tackle climate change across their investment portfolios and lending portfolios. And all of our major banks have signed up to it either individually or through their parent banks.
Yep. Right?
And so with that, they need to set targets for greenhouse gas emission reductions out to 2050, with the first ones being 2030. And they need to focus on their highest emitting parts of their portfolio, ag essentially. So what we've got here is almost cartel behavior, where we've got a whole bunch of banks meeting up in Glasgow, making decisions that effectively remove any choice from farmers in New Zealand. They're going to have it inflicted upon them by some lender. And I think there's a real question around, I think, New Zealand's sovereignty, to be perfectly honest, if you can have essentially that sort of behavior.
And any New Zealander who would let that sovereignty go on that issue is something to be worried about. So I think you're calling for an independent inquiry into rural banking to address the issues. So how do you think that would be set up?
Right. So in February, we wrote to the Primary Production Select Committee and asked them to open an inquiry into rural banking. You know, the Primary Production Select Committee are effectively the select committee for farmers, right? And so most of them are from a rural background. They'll understand farming. They'll understand the, you know, basically farmer sentiment and how banking works to an extent. So they to me, seem like a very good place to go. So they've opened a briefing into rural banking. We've all submitted to it, like all the Federated Farmers, all the banks, et cetera, and a few others have submitted, and we spoke to that submission yesterday. What we're asking them to do is obviously open this inquiry. They've still got a decision to make on that, but we think we're going to be able to get it over the line. We've put forward what I think is an incredibly strong case that there are some really big questions that need to be answered. You know, not ones that we have the actual answers to. We're not banking experts, but we want them to dig around a bit and come up with, you know, identify all the problems and then come up with, you know, effectively what's broken and then some solutions and then actually pressure, you know, Parliament effectively to enact something to fix it.
So what layers can be peeled back, do you think, to kind of get it back to what you or farmers would want that is fair? Because it's obviously got to be fair, right?
Yeah, right. So what we're going to look at here is, you know, we've talked a lot about the Reserve Bank, you know, and effectively their regulation that is driving a lot of this and the fact that they're being overly conservative. So the mandates are basically financial stability and inflation, right? So If you've ever got a KPI that is quite extreme like that, it's very easy to go right down that road, you know, and forget about everything else. And we think that really should be that they should be balancing economic prosperity along with financial stability and obviously inflation. So we wanted to have a very good look at that. In terms of the stress testing side of things, So these latest capital requirements are expected to have increased interest rates by 0.5 to 1.2% based on their own modeling, which is between $320 and $760 billion, or million dollars,
Whoa.
sorry,
Yeah,
per
well, it's a
year,
lot.
which is more than Hawaka Ekanola were ever going to cost. And so, but their stated benefit in their cost benefit analysis when they bought this in was actually very, very marginal. And so we want the primary production
So
circuit.
it's ideological.
It's ideological. Exactly. That we're supposed to shrink GDP by 0.43%, these capital requirements. And sorry, I don't have all the figures quite with me, but essentially it's very marginal as to whether it's going to be the case. So what we want the Primary Production Select Committee to do is to actually look and see the actual impacts rather than the modeled impacts on GDP of these capital requirements and say, is this actually worthwhile? Has it worked out how they thought it was going to? We would argue that it's been far worse than that, and therefore really question whether or not they've got the settings right, and whether or not they should change them.
Wow. So where does farming, if everything stays in place, where does farming like it is now, where does it end up? I mean, is it a slow decline and consolidation into big farms? What happens if people can't sort of maintain their hold on to that?
Well, that's a really good question. I think it's gonna, if everything stays as it is, things will get more and more difficult for new farmers to come into farm ownership. It's already hard enough for farms to be passed down from, from retiring farmers to new farmers, and I think that'll continue to get worse. It will become far harder for farmers to actually continue to invest or have the confidence to invest in new technology, new farming systems, in order to stay competitive internationally. And that's just not where we need it to be, right? I think you're right. We'd see far more corporate ownership. What we need is the inverse of that. What we had 20, 30 years ago, where farmers had confidence to invest in new technology, to develop new farming systems, to increase their productivity, to bring in more exports, create export, sorry, create economic growth, and that's just not there right now. So we need a rural banking system that will actually enable farmers to do what they need to do to be viable into the future, and that's what we're really pushing for. This isn't just about fixing today's problems. This is about enabling the future.
One thing that I took notice of that you said, and that was the data used for all those formulations, climate, etc. There seems to be a pattern there because we've been involved in other issues around the country, not like this one, but where worst case scenario reports, that those reports are beyond reasonable, let's say, are used as the driving sort of the data to drive setting, making these settings. I mean, no one ever uses worst case scenario. We keep it in mind, but it's very unlikely that it'll be worst case, and it's very unlikely it'll be best case. But to always seize on to worst case, that's a tell of something, isn't it? That's trying to make, those skies could fall in. It's making it sound really bad when it's possibly not. I mean, the climate stuff that we've seen, the rainfall measurements ahead for inundation are just ridiculous, as an example.
Oh God, I think you've got onto a very important point here, and this all comes down to what someone's trying to achieve from the modeling or from the data, right? So, you can choose what data you want to input in order to model whatever you want. So if you choose if you're wanting to have a realistic scenario, you would choose something that's a little bit more realistic and go a few percent, either side. If you're wanting to make a huge point and talk about a big crisis, etc., you would use the doomsday, worst case scenario stuff. Completely agree, though. You always want to understand all of the scenarios and have an eye on it and say, well, what might we do if? But you wouldn't want to set your whole business up accordingly. Like, to put it in a farming perspective, if I plan for a drought every year, I'd never make any money, right? you know, I would have no animals grazing my farm. And
you'd be risk averse of the yin yang.
Exactly. You know, what you've got to do is say, well, look, this is the season I would expect to have, and stock my farm accordingly and say, look, we often get a 5 to 10% variation in pasture growth. Therefore, I will have these contingencies in place. But if we do have a drought and I get 30% less, then this is what I'll do.
Yeah. Not to base the whole thing on, you know, the sky's falling in. But that's a useful thing to have too, because that gives you power.
Yep, exactly.
Yep. It's, anyway,
like I said, it all comes down to your narrative that you're wanting to push.
Yeah. Can you give us a timeline on what the activities you've been involved in here specifically talking about, just so our listeners can anticipate ahead and maybe, you know, back on chatting about it?
Yeah, sure. So nothing ever happens as fast as I would think it should or could, right?
Especially not the only one.
The wheels of power. So look, I think this Primary Production Select Committee have another week, possibly 2 weeks, depending on exactly how the budget stuff goes and that, of hearing submissions on this briefing itself. Then they have to have a meeting to decide if they're going to have an inquiry. So I would like to think that we'll get an announcement in the next 2 to 3 weeks as to whether or not there is going to be an inquiry. Like I said, I think there's a huge argument for one, and I think there's a good chance that we will get one. Then from there, it's about fitting it into the Primary Production Select Committee's calendar and obviously allowing all of the parties, including farmers or individual farmers, the opportunity or time to prepare for their submission so that they can state their case really well. So I would think any actual inquiry, if it did come about, would be 2, 3, 4 months time, at a little bit of a guess. But that, look, I'd much rather we took a little bit of time and did it right rather than did it fast.
Yep.
Otherwise, it's just a box ticking exercise. And I really think this is a once in a generation opportunity.
What's the structural issue, isn't it? It's structural.
It is, and we need to understand it really well. I'm also incredibly passionate about allowing farmers to actually speak about their actual physical experiences. And, you know, though, since we've started talking about this 6 or 8 months ago, I have just been inundated with phone calls and emails from farmers wanting to tell me some really very harrowing stories about their interactions with the rural banking system. So, you know, I'm very passionate about allowing those voices to be heard.
Where do you farm?
I farm in the coastal Horowhenua, so about an hour and a half north of Wellington.
Nice, yeah.
About 5 km from the sea.
Okay, 5 km from the sea. You better watch it. That sea level rise is going to get you. You know that. Next year, probably. Worst case scenario. Richard McIntyre, Federated Farmers Commerce and Competition Spokesman. Thanks for coming on RCR. Nice to chat to you. Really interesting. Thank you.
Awesome. Great to chat, Paul.
Altex Machine is now live. Send us your thoughts by texting your message to 2057. That's 2057. So get in touch with us now.